Well, we say happy Friday to you guys once again. You've tuned into the FDN Fantastic Friday Call, and I'm happy to be with you. I am your host, Brandon Mollet, FDN practitioner, I guess first and foremost, but also mentor and clinical advisor, and I do a lot of things around FDN land. I love it, and I do FDN personally with my own clients, and love the life I have and the work that we get to do. And happy to come to you guys pretty much each week on Friday afternoon. This has been a 10-plus year tradition of having a Friday call. We call it just around here. It's actually like a podcast, I guess, technically. But the Friday call, we come to you guys and we just check in with you guys. We're going to give you some announcements, let you know what's going on in FDN land. We want to answer questions. It's called the support call is one thing that we call it as well. And we want to answer questions for you, too. So sometimes we do that. Sometimes we have a guest on. That's actually what we're going to have today is a really awesome guest. You guys probably have been around FDN for very much at all. You probably know who this is, but I'll bring her on here in a second. But just want to say congratulations to some graduates here this week that we have coming up. Actually, one lone graduate. I shouldn't say graduates, it's graduates. But that's awesome, though. One, tremendous. We're happy to announce our graduate this week from Australia is Vanessa Chianos. I had a great time talking with her. She's got a heart for women with menopausal situations and extensive background. And we're going to just say congratulations and give a round of applause here for Vanessa. Congratulations, Vanessa. Good stuff. Good stuff. Graduates each week coming out of FDN out there to do the important work that we're doing that I get to do on a regular basis, and a lot of you guys too. So again, thanks for joining me on the call here. I think we're going to have actually Reed to come on at some point. I think he's going to try to make it in his schedule to come on and talk. Can't make a promise, but I know he wanted to jump on and say hi to everyone here. So look forward to that. Number for the call today, if you do want to call in and ask our guest a question or make a comment, happy to have you do it. This is a live call here. So the number for that is 347-637-1378. Again, that's 347-637-1378. That's the number there. You can call in, hit 1 on the keypad. I'll see that you're up there on the switchboard. I'll be happy to bring you on. If you want to ask our guest a question, you can certainly do that. Just say hello, make a comment. Love to have you on the call there. So announcement-wise, as you guys know, the FDN conference is coming up. It's less than a month away. I can't believe how fast it's taken to get here. I feel like we announce it and talk about it every week, which we do. But we're building up here to November 1st through the 3rd in San Diego, right? The Hard Rock Hotel this time. We had a great time last year. It was just absolutely tremendous. We're celebrating 10 years of FDN and decided we're going to make this an annual thing. So even a larger venue can take care of more people, get more FDNs together. But the first through the third, I think the time to get tickets is winding down very, very quickly. I don't know the details on that for sure, but check your email on that. Check the Facebook page. Jim will keep us posted on that, what's going on there. But it's coming up really quickly. Hope you can make it. Doesn't matter where you're at in this process. If you are a graduate, if you're a trainee, even if you're looking at the course, I've had many people come to the conference last year that were just looking at taking the course, wanted to get a feel for what we're about and what we do. So it's a good way to do that. And, you know, network with some great people, have a lot of fun, listen to some amazing speakers, and just have the, you know, be part of the biggest gathering of FDN practitioners that we have all year long. So it's just tremendous. So FDN Conference is the website there. FDNconference.com is the website. Get some of the details there if you'd like. See our speaker lineup, see what the schedule of activities is going to be. Always something cool to be doing. Sometimes we have simultaneous events going. We have so much we're trying to pack into that weekend, but it's going to be awesome, going to be a good one. And so part of that, we're gearing up here for the conference. We're trying to do as much as we can to tell you about our speakers. That are some people are people that you've known for a while that maybe we had last year, but also some new faces. So getting to know the speakers, that way you know who you're going to be hearing from each week. So we're going to try to feature those on our on AFTMP webinars, on the Friday call. Just depends on, you know, what schedule works best for people. That's the goal here, is to let you know who's out there and the awesome work they're doing. A lot of FDN practitioners out there doing good work as well. And so good stuff. So I get to do some interviews, which I haven't done those in a while now. Usually it's Q&A, so I look forward to checking in with people here. So, all right. It is October 11th, 2019, if I didn't say that. So the conference is the 1st to the 3rd, so again, less than a month away. I'll tell you what, I think I'd like to say hello to, I think she's there. Laura, are you there?
I am.
All right. Hey, Laura, how are you?
I'm doing pretty good. How are you?
Doing great. Doing great. Guys, this is, you know, Laura Adler. If you are in the realm at all and thinking about all about environmental toxins, her name is going to come up, right? So she's one of the foremost experts on this. She's been on several Friday calls with us in some pro series. So you guys, I think, know her decently well at this point, but maybe some of you guys don't. But she's going to be a feature speaker at the conference this year. And we want to bring her on and just talk about where things have been going. So if I just, by the way of bio here, Laura is an environmental toxins expert and educator, by the way. She's going to be joining us again at the conference. She's a certified holistic health coach who teaches how to eliminate the number one thing holding their clients back from the results they are seeking, and that's the unaddressed link between chemicals and chronic health problems. That's a big one there. And so this year she's going to be talking about hormonal havoc, how hormonal or environmental toxins are trashing our hormones. So tremendous stuff. Laura, thanks for being on with us.
Yeah, I'm happy to be here and happy to talk about toxins with you guys.
There we go. That's cool. So have you got any good news for us? Are things getting better out there? Or are they getting worse? Or where are we at?
I think it's a little bit of both. So, you know, I actually, this conversation about environmental toxins tends to be like pretty overwhelming. It's mostly bad news. It's, you know, the big black cloud over everyone's head. And so I really try to highlight, like, what are the silver linings? What are the good things that are happening? You know, on the sort of dark gray cloud side, we definitely are living in an era where we have more exposure to environmental chemicals than we ever had before. So that part definitely isn't great. But on the flip side of that, we also have a really amplified awareness of this issue that didn't exist 10 years ago. And so more and more consumers are aware of these issues. They're looking for better products and safer products. And the options in the marketplace have like completely exploded. So that's really the great news. It's easy, more easy now than it's ever been to avoid or start reducing our exposure to these environmental chemicals in our daily lives than ever before. So that's great news.
That is, we have to have some positive news out there. We can be a lot of doom and gloom in what we do, for sure. Sometimes we're always battling against the culture and the current and everything that's going on. But yeah, I think I've noticed that too, for sure. Even some of the bigger companies out there, the corporations, you know, I guess it's a lot of market driven, right? So what are people wanting? They're going to try to supply that.
Yeah, I mean, we see that, you know, all the big box stores, Target, Costco, Walmart, Home Depot even are taking action towards, you know, eliminating certain products from their store shelves or, you know, asking retailers or asking manufacturers, rather, to be more transparent in the ingredients that are used in their products. You know, just in the last, you know, 2 months, Home Depot announced that they're no longer going to be selling glyphosate-based products. They also just announced that they're no longer going to be selling carpets that are treated with perfluorinated chemicals. These are nonstick, stain-resistant chemicals that carpets are often treated with. So, like, those are huge, huge wins in this space. And that comes not from, you know, government regulations or anything like that, but rather from, you know, consumer awareness and demand.
That is good news. I did not know about that.
Yeah.
That seems huge. It should be front page.
It's huge. You know, the Home Depot is one of, you know, it's an enormous retailer. So for them to really side on the side of the consumer and what they are wanting is the sign of a really sort of, pardon the colloquialism, woke and progressive company. Like, they know what's up. They know what's up.
Well, I guess that means that our voice and our pocketbook matters. It has an influence.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And in fact, it's one of the biggest things that, like, I like to kind of, it's the drum that I kind of beat over and over again, is that, you know, when we, you know, as practitioners, you know, yes, of course, we want to do this for ourselves, but we also want to empower our clients to start taking action in this space. And, you know, it's a great opportunity to remind clients that they have so much buying power in the marketplace. Like, they are the, you know, the driving force that dictates, you know, consumer trends and product manufacturing. So it's on us. We have a lot of power. We should use it.
Mm-hmm. Yes, indeed. Hey, Reed, there you are.
Hi. How are you, sir?
Hi, got you there.
Hey.
Laura,
it's so good to have you here on our show. And, you know, Brandon, you're always doing a fantastic job. I just wanted to comment on what you were just saying. We call it voting with our wallet.
Yeah.
Vote with your wallet, man. Don't spend money where they don't support our ideals and the things that we believe in, if you can help it.
Yeah, absolutely. Hi, Reed.
Hi. So good to see you. Looking forward to seeing you at the conference.
Yeah, likewise. Yes, excited to share, excited to see you. I think it's going to be super fun.
Yeah. And for anyone listening, there's still a few tickets left for the conference. We'd like to have it sold out. So if you haven't made the dive yet, jump in. You'll get to see great speakers like Laura and all the others. And Brendan, everyone wants to shake your hand, man.
Well, I shook a lot of hands and gave a lot of hugs last year, and that was pretty awesome. Almost overwhelming to see people that, you know, I've talked to for years now, even worked with for a while. We don't always get together face to face, and so to have that connection there and to share multiple meals together, it's something pretty powerful.
Yep.
Well, tremendous. Well, good.
So go on with
Laura,
your
maybe
interview.
Back.
Yeah.
Yeah, good. That's fine. Reed, jump in anywhere you want to. I was just going to say, for Laura, for those that don't know you very well, how did you even get into this this topic anyhow, become such an expert?
Yeah, so, you know, I got into it really through the avenue of health coaching, you know, over a decade ago at this point. I, you know, had a whole other career like a lot of people, and then they find this sort of new path in the health space, and that was very much my journey. And I was working with clients as a health coach around weight loss, because it was, you know, I figured it was like an easy thing. I can figure that out. And so I worked with people that, you know, wanted to lose not a serious amount of weight, but, you know, 10, 15 pounds. And some of my clients, you know, did all the things, they lost the weight. And then I had like, you know, two or three clients who did all the things, quote unquote, but didn't lose the weight. And that really, you know, was frustrating for them, certainly frustrating for me. And I started to look into, you know, what are the underlying things that I might be missing around resistant weight loss. And that's really what kind of opened the door to this world of environmental chemicals and the different ways in which they can impact our health. And, you know, there wasn't really anybody at that time that was talking about this, and it struck me as kind of insane, frankly, that this was such a big topic, and everything that I was reading was, you know, pointing to these chemicals as being a major contributing factor to pretty much all chronic illness and health issues, not just weight gain or having trouble losing weight. And it was fascinating to me. And so that's really, like, once I was there, I was hooked, and I just, you know, basically was like, how can I make it my job that I get to talk about this stuff all day? Because it's really fascinating.
That's what I was going to ask. Was there any training out there? Were you trained really by anybody? I was thinking it's not really the case, almost like, I guess, you know, EMFs and that topic is now. It's all such a new thing, and nobody really has done a ton of work on it, brought it together where it's really useful and understandable quite yet. Just a few people are doing that. So I guess that's sort of the way it was for you. You were, in some ways, a pioneer in this.
Yeah, I mean, like, I'll definitely, you know, say that in the environmental medicine community, which is not the community that I was in, because I was, you know, I was a health coach. I was surrounded by, you know, that sort of allied health professional, not really with the medical community. But there were some programs, there still are, that were on environmental medicine that are specifically for clinicians, but they were not very many. And as somebody who was working sort of boots on the ground with clients on lifestyle changes, like those trainings weren't relevant to the work that I was doing because those trainings were very clinical in nature and they were talking a lot about, like, you know, occupational exposures and not really talking about lifestyle modification. And I definitely felt a little bit like I was kind of stepping out on my own, and I was like, okay, well, nobody else is talking about this. I'll see, you know, I'll see how it goes. You know, I spent about 2 years before I stepped out really self-teaching in this space and, you know, attending every lecture and conference that I could and talking to the research, you know, researchers and scientists that are actually doing this work and producing this data, because I wanted to make sure that I really truly understood what the research was saying, because I was, you know, I was wanting to take that information and translate it. But in order to do that, I needed to make sure that I was really understanding it. And so I spent, you know, 2 years doing that before I really started to step out as this sort of environmental toxins person who's teaching health professionals. And, you know, the research never stops. Like, the new information is literally coming out every single day. So I am still very much immersed in what is coming out, what is this new research saying, and how do we translate that into actionable steps for clients and patients.
I'll come back to the actionable steps, but I was going to ask you about those first clients you started working with, doing some of this work. Were they receptive to this? Did they think you were sort of crazy when you started talking about maybe these new areas to look at?
Yeah, it was a really good question. So definitely some of them were a little bit like, what are you talking about? Like, that's ridiculous. And then some others were, you know, they're already, you know, like I would say, if somebody's open to hiring a health coach, they're already a little bit more open to this integrative, holistic concept. And so I sort of had somewhat of a bias in my audience because they were already seeking help from someone like me. So they were already a little bit open. So I didn't have too much resistance from the clients that I was working with. In fact, what most of them felt was like, they were fascinated just in the same way that I was. They were like, oh my God, I had no idea, was probably the most common reaction people had. But those early days of learning to have those conversations really helped form my understanding of how we talk about toxins to people so that we are coming from a place of empowerment, so that we're not overwhelming people, we're not being fear-based or sensational in the information that we share or the way that we share it. And that actually has become a big cornerstone of the work that I do with my students, is that it's not just about having, you know, this information about chemical A and health effect B. It's about how do we use this in real life? How do we weave this into the conversations that we're having in a way that is actionable, that's not fear-mongering or anything like that, because I realized that's pretty important. But I learned that in those sort of early health coaching clients that I worked with. I overwhelmed a lot of people in the beginning. I'll just say that.
Yeah, I can see that. Oh, yeah. Well, I think it's why you're such a good fit for FDN and FDN practitioners, because that's pretty much how we work, right? You know, to this, we're very practical. And we want to educate, and we want to have practical, actionable steps they can take and empower people to take care of their own health. That's our mandate, our philosophy there. So the way you approach things is just a great fit for FDM practitioners.
Yeah, I mean, I think that it has to be that way. Go ahead, Reed.
Yeah, so, yes, thanks, Laura. It's so true, Brennan. You know, one of our commandments, if you will, is to reduce stress in any way that it could be identified. And the environmental toxins are ubiquitous. They're just every freaking where. And I wasn't in on the beginning of the call, but I'm sure that we need to mention the number of chemicals in the environment. Dr. Tom O'Brien's a good friend of ours too. And I think he said it's 250 yards or barrels or something like that per person per day. It's an unbelievable amount that's being poured in the environment. Very few of these environmental or chemicals are tested for human consumption or use or exposure and things like that. It's like the test is us. We're the guinea pigs in the maze. And it's that, like what you have on your Facebook page, it's innocent until proven guilty. You know, like you just, okay, go ahead, do whatever you want to the environment. And if it kills anyone, we'll let you know.
It's really I'm actually fascinated by sort of teasing apart, like, why is it that way? Like, why is it that we have innocent until proven guilty, where, like, in the European Union, they regulate chemicals under what's called the precautionary principle, which is a better safe than sorry. And, like, the European Union still has its issues. It's not a perfect system for regulating chemicals, but it far exceeds what we do here. And I really look at it through the lens of, you know, the first of all, you know, here in the United States, we have tort law, which basically is like, you know, oh, if you think it's bad, sue us. But the burden of proof on the consumer to say, like, oh, this cancer came from your product. Like, these chemicals are used in thousands of products. So are you going to sue all the companies? Like, it's just not a viable option. And so, you know, the our legal system basically says, like, if you think there's harm done, that's why we have tort law, and tort law just kind of fails us in this capacity. But the other big issue is that in the European Union countries, they have a national healthcare system where the governments foot the bill for health issues. And they, because they're paying the bill, they have far more sort of skin in the game, and are going to move to regulate chemicals, because if they're the ones that are paying the bill for all these health issues, it behooves them to do that. And in the United States, we don't have a national healthcare system. And so the burden of bearing the cost of these exposures falls on the consumer, not on the government. So until we have a national healthcare system, chemicals will not be regulated appropriately. And even then, you know, it would be great if they were, but who knows what will happen. But that's really why I see that big fundamental difference in the way that we are exposed to chemicals versus the European Union is. There was a really fascinating study, I'll actually share this at the conference, that looked at 5% of known endocrine disrupting chemicals. There's over 1,000 chemicals that have been identified as endocrine disrupting. This paper looked at 5% of them, so, you know, a tiny number, and compared them, I think it was to about 11 chronic diseases like heart disease, diabetes, cancer, and then things like loss of IQ points, because that has a dramatic effect on earning potential. And so they're looking at the economic implications. So they looked at 5% of endocrine disruptors and these, 11 chronic illnesses, and sort of extrapolated out the financial burden that these chemicals were costing. And it costs the U.S. $340 billion a year in healthcare costs and lost wages each year. And that's like 2% of our gross domestic product. So it's like an insanely high number. And that's because we don't regulate them well. And in the European Union, that number was about 2/3 less. So it's about $134 billion because they regulate them differently. So, like, there's major implications, not only in, like, the individual with a chronic health issue, but, like, in society with healthcare and the economy. So, you know, it's a far-reaching issue. And a fascinating, fascinating topic to kind of tease apart.
Yeah, and I think we might want to look at what can people do for themselves. Obviously, as health coaches, you know, and again, back to the DRESS principle of stress reduction, and you can't empty a bathtub if you don't cut off the water supply, kind of a theory. But in the big picture, the U.S., which I still think is the greatest country in the world, it needs to adopt more of the precautionary principle that the EU is a little more advanced at, you know, definitely. Because what we end up sort of relying on here is these, and I think they're vultures, but these big insurance or law firms that take on, like, Monsanto and the asbestos people. So now there's like this huge pool of money, that if you have glyphosate poisoning and can prove that you got lymphoma or something from at least a 2-year exposure, well, there might be some money there for you. Well, thanks a lot. You know, that's the that's the innocent until proven guilty system, which is all after the fact. It's like, okay,
you've
pretty much ruined. Yeah, it's just not the right system. And again, these lawyers are making all the money off it, and people are just maybe getting little pieces of their lives back, maybe, if they're not dead already.
Yeah.
So
and
it's
those
just
are
not
the
right
number
system.
Of,
yeah.
No, and the number of cases that actually make it as far as the lawsuits with, like, Monsanto and Johnson & Johnson with the talcum powder, like, those are exceptions to the rule. Like, the reason why those get press is because they're so unusual. And, you know, 99.99% stuff like that never actually makes it to trial. And people are – and, you know, the reality is it's like people are walking around. They're like, you know, I hate slash love this expression. They're like the walking dead, meaning they're all shouldering some type of chronic illness, and not necessarily one that they would be like, oh, I'm injured. It's like they have Hashimoto's or they have insulin resistance. Like, those are not things that we associate with a chemical exposure, but yet those are the very things that this sort of chronic low dose exposures are linked to. And, you know, the flashy cases of lymphoma or, you know, uterine cancer or whatever, like, those are the exception to the rule, because most often what's happening is that we're just having slight alterations in our hormones that might affect our metabolism or that might affect our fertility or that might affect our, you know, growth and development or mood or energy even. And we don't notice those things. I know, Reed, you often say that, like, common doesn't mean normal. Like, things that are common, like, these things are all common, but that does not make them normal. And that's really what we're seeing, is people are just walking around kind of unaware that the annoying things that, like, their joints hurt when they wake up in the morning, or their, you know, hair is falling out, or, you know, they are keep putting on weight or whatever the thing is, like, they don't necessarily associate that with, they just think it's part of getting older. And that's not the case. And so, you know, and I just like to spotlight that most of the exposures that we're getting to these environmental chemicals, these toxicants, are affecting us in that way, not necessarily in something as sort of acute as a cancer or, you know, lymphoma, something like that. I mean, that they certainly happen for sure, but, you know, most of us are walking around with some kind of hormonal imbalance. And I would argue that some percentage of that is attributed to these endocrine disruptors.
Yeah, no question about it. And Brandon, I'm not hogging your spotlight call here, but it's so fascinating. This is one of my favorite areas. You know, prior to FDN, I was in the environmental law field and studied all the huge cases that of mostly the government and these huge companies poisoning the rest of us. And one thing that Dr. Russell Jaffe said, you know, he's the PERC guy, and the guy who he owns a lab and a supplement company, huge guy, lectures all over the country. And he says, we're, quote, marinating in a toxic soup. Now, that might be a little extreme. I don't feel like I am. But in fact, we are. It's kind of the frog in the boiling water theory. You know, if you throw a frog in boiling water, he'll jump out, right, or try to. But if you slowly turn, if you put him in water, slowly turn up the temperature, he just kind of sits there until he boils. And that's the kind of toxic soup we're in. It's slowly percolating and marinating us, and we end up with all these strange diseases. And like Laura just said, you know, only in rare cases do, you know, the mesothelioma or lymphoma and these things come about. So it's remarkable. I'm not getting involved in any lawsuits, but I do want to help people.
If Reed, you would probably like this. I don't know if you have seen, there's sort of three pieces of, I'll call it content for lack of a better term, that are going to be probably will tickle that part of your brain that is interested in the environmental law. is the documentary The Devil We Know, which is about DuPont suppressing information about the chemicals that they produce, the perfluorinated chemicals in their from their factories in Parkersville, West Virginia. And then the new book called Exposed, which is, I can't remember the author's name, but it's a new book that's basically written from the lawyer who spent 20 years going after DuPont. And now there's a motion picture, like a feature-length film starring Mark Ruffalo called Dark Waters coming out in November that is about this DuPont case. So like that is going to be right up your alley, and I definitely encourage everybody to go watch those films and check out that book because it really shines a big spotlight on how corrupt some of these big companies are and the lengths they go to protect their profits over everything else. And you know, the end result is that, you know, us as people are kind of left mopping up the mess, and that's not very fair.
Yeah, and this stuff that they're making, which actually has a use in, you know, perfluorinated products are good at, you know, like making things waterproof or, you know, oil resistant or heat resistant or, you know, stuff that we want our product, you know, you don't want to have, you know, pots and pans that melt or something like that. So you might put some PFCs on them. Problem is they get in the water and they affect everything. They affect, and they are huge endocrine disruptors. They cause infertility, they injure your liver. The kids don't grow and develop properly, things like that. They're really horrible. You know, I mean, we could maybe live with a little less of these things in our environment.
I think that would be great if that was the case.
Well, guys, you've tuned into the FDN Fantastic Friday call, and we're interviewing Laura Adler. She's going to be one of our featured speakers at the FDN conference. Her website, just to make sure I put this out there, it's lauraadler.com. It's LARAADLER.com. Check out more about her there and some of the offerings that she has there. A lot of good education and training. And we are welcoming callers. So, Laura, if you don't mind, we might bring on a caller here as a question for you. That'd be okay?
Yeah, I would. I'd be thrilled.
Okay. All right. So I'm going to bring this one on here. I have 303 area code. Hey, what's your name and what's your question for Laura?
Hey, it's Chris Wilson.
Well, hey there, Chris.
So my question is, kind of two parts, and hope everyone's having a great afternoon. I'm just sitting here filling out part of my written exam, training in progress. But, Laura, I've seen you at the Live It to Lead It seminar in Nashville with Dr. Pompa, and I'm an avid follower of Dr. Pompa. And two questions. The first is, so you're a certified environmental toxic specialist. Where did you get that certification? And two is, talking with a lot of people, especially in their 50s and 60s, that older school generation, they kind of understand environmental stressors and toxicities, but not to the level of what we do, because we kind of geek out on this kind of stuff. But without overwhelming people, because you have more expertise than I do on this, is how do you still communicate thoroughly to someone xenoestrogens, heavy metals, or any other type of environmental stressor that could be contributing to, as we FDNs like to say, their metabolic chaos, to help them understand certain lifestyle changes with especially beauty products. Those things are just laden with chemicals and, you know, toxic house cleaners, household cleaners. How can you relate that to a person without freaking them out? Like, what are some of your strategies of going about that?
So those are great questions. I'll start with the first one and then go to the second one. So to clarify, I'm actually a certified holistic health coach, is my sort of formal certification. And in the environmental medicine, environmental health space, I've actually completely self-taught. I've been spending, at this point, it's close to 12 years, really immersing myself in this research to understand this topic. You know, there are, at the time when I first started doing this work, there were actually not any programs, formal education programs in this space outside of getting a master's in public health in environmental studies, but even then they don't tend to look, those programs don't tend to look in this space. So I kind of had to build my own educational curriculum, and it worked out for me. So that's the first part of that question. The second part is actually something I spend a lot of time teaching my students about, is how do we engage with our clients in a way that isn't just us kind of talking at them about chemicals, like, oh, you need to change your products, you need to change your household cleaners. What I always suggest is connecting the topic of environmental chemicals to the specific health issue that they're struggling with. So most people like see the world through the lens of their health issue. So if somebody's dealing with diabetes, they see the world through the lens of diabetes. I can't eat that. I can't eat this. It's going to make my blood sugar bad, whatever. Somebody that has a thyroid disorder might see the world through that lens. And so if we can kind of tune into that frequency and say, hey, you know, you have a thyroid condition, like in our working together, it's really important that we look not only at, you know, your nutrition and your food, but also at things that are not food related, that are related to the products that we buy and use every day that can actually really affect your thyroid in ways that are leading to the symptoms that you're experiencing. So we just kind of set the stage for them in that way. And that tends to open them up because they recognize, oh, this cleaning product or, oh, this shampoo is actually making my symptoms worse. Yikes. So we kind of have to connect it to their specific health issue. And obviously, if there is no connection, we don't want to just talk at people. But we can't just talk about the ways in which these products that, quote, seemingly are safe. And I think it's important to kind of put that out there and go, you know what, like, I know it seems crazy that our shampoo would have anything to do with our health issues. However, that's actually what can be happening. And let me just quickly explain why. And I find that that contextualizing things in that way really helps open people up to making changes. I don't know if that's helpful to hear it positioned that way, but that tends to be how I encourage my students to approach it. There definitely is a generational issue. You know, my dad is 82 years old and he's just like, I don't know what you're talking about. These things are fine. And I'm like, okay. Sometimes we just can't connect with everybody, but you know, I think that the people that are going to be more receptive are the people that are seeking your help already. If that makes sense.
I think so. Yeah. Chris, how's that sound?
No, that sounds excellent. Appreciate you answering the question, and I'd have to agree, because also I'd also like to look at someone's genetic potential from that older generation, because they weren't maybe as exposed to the chemical onslaught that this younger generation is. And so, because that's a lot of the pushback that I get, for one, people who aren't really taking their health seriously, they'll always revert back to the quote of, well, my grandparents or my parents or this person, they've eaten terrible for years and nothing's happening to them, or she's 98 and she still smokes and she walks around perfectly fine. But I guess it's the attitude that they carry about health and how serious they are wanting to look at possible outside contributors to their health challenges, aside from food just being one of the culprits.
Right. And, you know, I get that comment a lot where people say like, oh, but I've been doing this for, you know, so long and I'm fine. And what I usually say to that is, you know, you might have genetics that make it so that you are fine, but collectively we, like as a people, are not fine.
Mm-hmm.
And we have rates of chronic illness that are rising at levels that cannot be explained by genetics, right? And then, and when we're in a situation where we have rising rates of disease that can't be explained by genetics, it's because there's something in the environment. And in that case, environment might be chemicals. It also might be nutrition. It might be stress. It might be trauma. Like there's so many layers to what makes somebody more and more resilient. And the scary part for me is that, you know, we have all of these epigenetic changes that are being passed on. So yeah, like grandma didn't have exposure to all the pesticides and herbicides and preservatives and plastic chemicals and nonstick chemicals that we do. which is great. And so, you know, she just might have had a stronger epigenome that might have dictated her longevity. And, you know, if we could pass those on, great. But now we're at a place where we are starting to pass on non-ideal epigenetic changes to our children. So we are compounding the issue for future generations. And that's the part where I'm like, ring the alarm bell. We need to really intervene.
Yeah, that's why we don't focus too much on gene testing until later in a case when we are looking for, you know, additional, let's say, opportunities, because it is epigenetics. And again, quoting that same guy, Dr. Russell Jaffe, who is a genius, he says genetics are like 8% of your problem. The other 92% is what Lawrence is called the epigenome. Yeah, epigenetics. It's the environment and you know, how you're interacting with that. And again, we lump it all into that idea of stress, whether it be environmental stress or what have you. So it is epigenetics. That's everything. And you're going to find those people who are squeaking by because they're the negative genes, in a sense, haven't been turned on. Well, good for you.
Yeah.
The rest of us get exposed to this stuff, and it can kill you and cause all kinds of dysfunction, metabolic gas, and disease processes, and the downward spiral. And yeah, we're living to 85, 90, but we're spending a crap ton of money on hospitals and, you know, this. Oh, Jesus.
Yeah, and I think the flip side of that is I've heard epigenetics referred to as the science of hope, because our epigenome is malleable, and we can, in the same way that we can turn on genes for cancer because of, you know, either childhood trauma or poor lifestyle or no, you know, sedentary lifestyle or environmental chemicals, we can also turn off some of the expression of those genes by eating nutritious, nutrient-dense food, by reducing our stress, by sleeping, like all the things that you guys teach in the DRESS protocol. And more, right? Reducing exposure to toxins, like having healthy relationships. These have all been shown to alter our epigenome in ways that are protective against illness. And so epigenetics is the science of hope. And I like to leave, you know, I like to tell that to people because we don't want to come from this place of like, oh, cancer runs in my family. I guess I'm just screwed. Nope, you have a lot of control over how your genes get expressed, and that's really powerful information for people who, you know, are dealing with health issues or, you know, have the threat of health issues in their family.
Mm, exactly. I think that's the biggest part, I think, of what we do. I feel like we're bringing hope to people in every way. So much of it, I feel like what people hear is, I have this disease or this situation, and it's something that I can really do about it. I have to take this medication forever. I have no control over this. Just the FDN message and everything we're talking about here, that just, I think, it just turns something on in a person. And I think the mental emotion, that helps the mental emotional side on a tremendous level.
Yeah.
So I think we're exactly right there. Mm-hmm. Well, we got about 15 minutes left in the call. So, Laura, I want to make sure that you had some time also just to maybe give a little preview of what you plan to talk about at the conference.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm going to be talking about the big topic of endocrine disruption. I think, you know, that there's so many different avenues in the environmental health space that I think are really critical for health professionals to have, you know, a pretty high degree of fluency on. But like if someone's only going to explore one topic, I really think it should be endocrine disruption, because this is such a ubiquitous issue. We're exposed constantly to hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of endocrine disrupting chemicals on a very regular basis, every single day, multiple times a day. And as you know, and as all of your FDM students know, that like the endocrine system really is kind of the big boss that controls, you know, pretty much everything in the body. And, you know, any mm-hmm. health issue that people have is going to have some hormonal component. And we have to really be informed about what these issues are, and then understand, you know, where are people being exposed and what are the simple, easy, actionable steps that people can take to start reducing their exposures to these endocrine disrupting chemicals. You know, one of the things that I'll be sharing about at the conference is this idea of dosage, meaning like, you know, a lot of the chemical companies or the chemical industry or product manufacturers will really defend the use of chemicals in their products by saying that, you know, it doesn't really matter. The amount in our products is so small, they're totally safe, there's no health effects from these small doses. And that really flies in the face of what we know about how the endocrine system functions. And, you know, the endocrine system, our hormones are communication messengers, like their job is to pass messages through the body and, you know, trigger, turn on, turn off a cascade of events that lead to, you know, metabolism or growth or mood or energy or whatever. And they communicate to each other in whispers, really, really, really small amounts. Typically, hormones in the body are measured in parts per trillion, which is extraordinarily small. And so when we think about the tiny, similarly parts per trillion, parts per billion, maybe even parts per million of chemicals that we're being exposed to, it makes sense that these exposures to endocrine disrupting chemicals at levels that our regulatory bodies and toxicology would otherwise deem, quote, safe, are in fact not safe, because they're communicating at the same frequency that our body was designed to communicate. And, you know, this concept of low-dose exposures really kind of blows apart a lot of the foundation of toxicology and the way that toxicology research is done, that they, you know, they rest their entire science, field of science, on the concept that the dose makes the poison. And endocrine disruption flies in the face of that. It really turns that concept inside out, and that's why we have a lot of resistance from traditional toxicology that is resistant to this idea that small amounts of chemicals matter. And the sucky part is that all of our regulatory decisions are based on toxicology, sort of traditional toxicology. So our regulatory bodies don't really take into consideration the potential health effects of these really seemingly small doses. And then the other thing that I think is so fascinating about endocrine disruption is that, you know, we're not exposed to just one endocrine disruptor in a day. We might be exposed to hundreds. And some of there, you know, is starting to be research that's teasing apart or trying to tease apart, like, well, what happens when we're exposed to two endocrine disruptors or three endocrine disruptors or four endocrine disruptors at the same time? And what they're finding is that 1 + 1 does not equal 2. 1 + 1 might equal 5. So the effect of exposure to two endocrine disrupting chemicals amplifies those effects, which is, you know, the number of people that are walking around with some kind of hormonal disruption is staggering. I would wager that it's probably everybody in some way or another. And I think, you know, it's probably due to this massive uptick in exposure to environmental chemicals. And, you know, that's what I was saying, that this is, to me, this topic of endocrine disruption is the one that I want people to get the most, which is why I wanted, that's what I really wanted to talk about at this conference. So I'm excited to kind of dive into that and share more of what the research is saying on this topic. And then giving people like really clear and simple actionable steps that they can take to start getting their clients or patients to reduce those exposures, like, and stuff that they can, you know, do the next day with their next client, like really easy conversational stuff. Mm-hmm.
So good.
Yeah, I think that's fantastic. I especially like, you know, I pick up terms and things people say, and I'm going to borrow this from you. Communicate in whispers. That is such a cool expression.
I'm just going to say
like,
that.
It's
I like
kind of
it
like,
too.
You know, it's a great one, Laura. Your new sofa is talking to you.
Oh my God! It is. Are you on my Instagram?
No, I might
be.
I mean, I don't know too
much about.
You're kidding.
No, I posted a picture of my new chair that I bought that my cat was chewing on, so I covered with a blanket because she's being a complete shit.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah, but and seriously, new furniture, new draperies, new carpeting. You know, it bothers me sometimes. I'll be doing push-ups anywhere. I'll drop down and do a few. And I'm wondering, am I closer to the carpet here, like getting more toxins in? You know, I actually think that way. You know, and I think about our pets because they got their noses right in it. You know, and then babies, think about that and what they're being exposed to.
Yep.
So that's the other side of the coin, I think. Go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead. Sorry, I just have so much interesting stuff to share that I was like, I can go down all these rabbit holes, but go on.
Yeah, and yet we'll keep it on track with there's the exposure. Obviously, it's ubiquitous. There's, I think, 84,000 chemicals now, of which only a couple hundred have been tested for safety. The rest of them were the tests, were the rats in the maze, so to speak. And the other side of it, though, is what can FDNs and health coaches do? And it is to help their clients improve their detoxification systems. So again, you were helping them empty the bathtub, but they've got to go home and check the environment, check their personal care products, check their household cleaning products and things. You know, I'm still trying to train my housekeeper to use the non-toxic stuff. And here in Southern California, we get ants, for instance. So what's the typical thing? Go buy some Raid. Not in my house. We don't use Raid.
Yeah.
You know, we're trying diatomaceous earth, spreading that powder all over the place. You know, that's what you do. You know, if you want to drain the bathtub, you've got to stop filling it up with the stuff. And so we can really help. I'm so encouraged by your work, Laura. I always have been. I think we know each other a long time, and I just have admired your work for so long.
Well, thank you for saying that, and also, you know, thank you for doing the work to help practitioners know how to kind of empty that bathtub. You know, I always say that optimizing health really requires at least, there's definitely more layers to this, but it requires at a minimum two fundamental actions. The first of those is reducing exposures, so minimizing exposures, and the other one is maximizing excretion. So that means maximizing our body's ability to eliminate, and making sure that we're pooping every day, that we are supporting our liver with all of the nutrient-dense foods and the, you know, foods that support bile production, and that we are moving our bodies and getting that lymph flowing, and that we're using sauna, that we're sweating. Because we need to sweat these toxins out. And I think that, you know, honestly, if everybody in the world just did that, and I say just because I recognize it's a lot of stuff right in there, but like if they just did that, they dialed down those exposures and optimized those excretory pathways, I think people would be a lot healthier than they currently are. And then we add in all of those other things, all of that stress reduction, all of the sleep optimization and the getting outside in the sunshine and putting your feet on the earth and, you know, having happier relationships, like those things together is sort of where all that magic happens. And, you know, you guys are helping lift that end of the sort of to-do list, which is great.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Laura,
and,
where can we hear more, learn more about you?
Sorry,
oh,
Brandon.
One?
There's a slight delay
in my
stuff. I didn't mean to do your job. I was just gonna say we've just got a few minutes left. Maybe one more question, or if you have another way of that you've been kind of wrapping things up, that's good too. But I just I want to encourage you when we and say to Laura that. You know, we have a lot of wonderful people on the line right now. If you have a question, raise your hand real quick. Let's get it in quick. But otherwise, most people listen through download. We get hundreds of downloads every week. And so, Brandon, I want to make sure we put a link to Laura's courses. She has four different courses that FDNs could take. Some are really short and some are a little bit longer. One includes a certificate of completion. And so I encourage people to go and get that extra study because – you know, we all know about reducing stress, and we're trying to do it in every way possible. And in the new stress module, stress reduction module. We've included quite a bit of, you know, reducing environmental stress, but there's nothing like going to the expert like Laura and getting it sort of from the horse's mouth. She's really been the one in this space that has pursued this as a passion. And so I'm going to encourage you guys to go there. And now you can close it out. Thanks, Brandon.
Thanks, Reed.
No, 100%. No, I agree with that for sure. So we'll put some information up there where you can find out more about Laura's work and training and things that she can teach us. There's a lot to learn there. So, but definitely an area we need to focus on as practitioners. I think we owe it to ourselves and our family and our clients for sure. So, all right. Well, just a few minutes left in the call here. Laura, anything else you wanted to add to the conversation here that didn't get a chance to touch on yet? We've got just a few minutes left.
I think the only thing that I'll add is that this is a journey, this is a process, both for ourselves as we're learning and also for the clients or patients that we're working with. You know, we don't want to kind of position this information in a way that makes them feel that they have to, like, throw everything out and start all over completely, like, on one day. We really just want to encourage people to, as I like to say, change the things we can control, so that we can worry less about the things that we can't. And that our goal as practitioners is to really educate, encourage, and empower our clients to make these changes that will, you know, in turn help optimize their health. And that's our overall goal. So empowerment all the way. That's what I'd like to really leave people with, thinking about it that way, because it can be a very heavy topic.
Mm-hmm. So we can still wear deodorant.
Yes, you just have to wear better deodorant.
All right. That's good. So, all right. Well, good stuff. Well, good stuff. So, Laura, again, thanks for being on. Look forward to seeing you there at the conference here on the 1st to the 3rd of November. You guys check out the website there, FDN Conference, for details on that. Again, maybe there's a few tickets left there. Things are filling up quickly. It's going to be an awesome time. And, you know, Chris, thanks for the questions there, too. Appreciate you calling in, buddy. And also to Vanessa, our graduate for this week. Guys, again, thanks for being with us, and have a great weekend. We'll talk to you guys soon. Bye-bye.
Thank you, everybody.